I'm Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hey, guys.
Hi. How are you?
Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. Happy drop day. Happy whatever day you're listening.
Happy day that ends in Y.
Exactly. Ooh, you got them.
All of them.
Today, we are recording on a little bit of a different day. It's midday. Shocking.
Which we never do.
No, we're usually like Tuesday nights curled up cozy.
We're usually in evening, but there's daylight around.
I know.
And dare I say sunshine out there.
Crazy.
We have coffee.
So good. And yesterday I was actually out at 7 p.m. and I was like, do you know what? This is light time in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels so wrong.
8 is light time in the summer, which is just wild because to me, this time of year, 8 p.m. is like, all right, like wind it down. In bed. The bra is off. The jammies are on.
There's a blanket. I'm cozy.
I'm yawning, stretching my arms, saying, ooh, is it that time already?
Yep. And then the summer, it's 8 p.m. and I'm like, great, we can still clean up. We can do like a little show or something.
Yeah, we have to go for our nightly walk. Like we have to go get some steps in. Yeah, absolutely.
Crazy. So
and right now I'm like, it is about time for sleep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is it that time?
And if I check my clock, it is
time for me to get the fuck in bed.
Time for me to unplug from the day. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. So crazy. I don't know. Okay. So we do have a slight corrections corner from last time. This is my bad. I apologize. I talked about The Midnight Feast. That is by Lucy Foley, not Alice Feeney. I have read a few from both of them and I apologize. That was my bad.
We are big fans of both of those authors though. So,
and like, what a compliment. I just wanted her included.
Yeah.
You know? So love it. But if you are looking for it, it is by Lucy Foley.
I have a lot of books on my to be read list. I'm going to start trying to work through them. We have some travel lined up for this year. Yes. So my hope is to get some reading in. On planes. I can read on planes. I'm a reader or a sleeper on a plane. I really can't do much else.
In the flight I took to Alaska, because that was long.
Yeah.
I was able to watch like a movie, but mostly I am like a sleeper. I have a playlist downloaded ready that's like 14 hours called my travel playlist. It's every song I like and I just shuffle it and I see what the vibe is.
I'm a fan of trying to sleep and try to wake up like just before you start descending.
Mm-hmm.
But here's my problem. Let me know. I understand these are first world problems. This is just like what it is like existing in my head. I hate having to use the bathroom on a plane.
Mm.
There's never enough room.
No.
You can't stand. Somehow my knees are hitting that, like mine.
Yeah.
I can't.
And you're like 3 feet tall.
Correct.
Yeah.
This is madness. So I just, and like the way the flush is weird. It seems like if you like pee, it like just falls out the bottom, like the way that it is.
Yeah.
It's just so weird in there, and washing your hands, you never feel clean.
Yeah.
Nothing about it feels clean. There's like sometimes a line and then I'm like, oh, what if the seatbelt goes back on and now I'm breaking the rules because I can't do that apparently either. And I love having the window seat because I just want to see outside.
Yeah.
And so now I'm like, now I have to interrupt or bother one, if not two people.
Right.
I mean, that one of them is usually my husband, but I still feel like bad about that, making everybody get up and like with my luck that whoever's got the aisle seat sleeping.
Yep.
And I always have to pee when I wake up. So if I take a nap and I wake up early, I have to pee. And now I'm like, well, now I still have 2 hours.
Oh.
So I got to like time it right. I really got to be. So if I read a little bit first, get me nice and tired.
Ooh, yeah.
And I'll probably put a podcast in my headphones that I've already heard. So I don't feel like I need to like fight staying awake to hear the end of it. I know it. I know how it ends. I still want to hear it again.
And I'm still going to eat.
I might have some wacky dreams, but that's fine.
Yep.
And then I wake up and I am like, where is that there bathroom? I am like, as soon as I'm off the plane, I am joining that very long line of women.
Yep.
At the first bathroom.
And that's what it is. Always. Every time.
100%. So I really don't, I don't love that piece. Again, first world problems. How lucky am I that I have the opportunity to have that problem and that stress? And I'm hyper aware of that, but it's also a very real stress to me in the moment.
Yes.
But I will always have to pee.
No, same.
As soon as I'm off the plane. And that's just something you got to know about me.
I do. And I agree. I have the same problem and having to like travel home usually by flight a lot of the time. I have just come to accept my fate. I'm like, whatever. I'm just going to pee. I will say I am always 100% of the time, despite doing this for a long time, so happily surprised when I find out that those bathrooms have tissues. Every time. I'm like, oh my God, thank goodness.
Tissues?
Yes.
What do you mean?
To blow your nose.
What bathrooms?
The ones in the planes.
They do?
Yeah. Oh. And I always forget that. And then I'm like, okay, I have to pee. And then I see them and I said, oh my gosh.
Oh.
The see, flight giveth.
But the flight can taketh away.
Oh, sure can.
I have this really... Now, all right, guys, keep it in your pants. I have this really sexy thing that happens to me where I get these chronic, like, gushing bloody noses seemingly out of nowhere, which is probably a condition I need to have checked out. But for now, I'm just blaming it on the cold. Right. It does happen in the winter, mostly. But I think I can look at something the wrong way and I get a bloody nose. And I'm always afraid of getting that on a plane because you really can't like go anywhere.
Right.
And these aren't like cutesy little like, oh, I just have like, a little like...
a little drop.
Need a little like dab. I'm like, no, this is... It looks like I'm hemorrhaging.
Yes.
And I need to go take care of this. And I'm so sorry for anybody who has to see it.
Yeah.
So now that I know that...
Oh, yeah.
That does not help me with my anxiety of it happening. But once it does happen, knowing that there are...
Oh, it's so nice.
Makes things a little better.
It does. And
I think you guys are learning a little too much about me today, but
I love it. I mean, first of all, I've known this forever, but I think
but it bears repeating.
It does. It does. And you deserve that attention. It matters.
Yeah, I'm a fighter.
Yes. God gives just a girl. His strongest battles to his hottest girlies.
Yeah, his hurtiest bellies.
Yeah, his hurtiest bellies to his hottest girlies.
Yeah.
Exactly. And his bloodiest noses.
Yeah. In his most anxious peas.
Oh, truly. Truly. I will say the only thing I like about the airport, not the airport bathroom, but the airplane bathroom, is that there's no performance anxiety. There's no one in there. I can just go, okay.
Yeah, but then there's people that are like, she's been in there a while. You know what I mean? You know, there's somebody that like clocked it in the back. Because like, what else are you going to do? They're like, she's dropping some...
You know? No, not even like just peeing. I actually had a nightmare last night that I had to go to the bathroom in a lot of stalls, but the stalls were really short and people could see you if they were standing up and I couldn't pee.
No, that's a nightmare.
I could not pee. I was so disturbed in this dream.
That's a nightmare.
Yeah.
I will say, okay, again, you guys are learning too much about me. I will sometimes wake up in the middle of the night having to pee.
Yes.
It is what it is. Yeah, I am what I am.
That's life.
My resolution... One of my resolutions, but I've been doing this for about a year now, has just been like, I need to drink more water.
Yep.
I have an Owala. Sponsor us. We love Please. You.
We
I
both actually have many.
I actually have more than one. I've gotten family on them. I'm a huge fan. I try to drink water pretty constantly.
Yeah.
And I noticed just how dehydrated I was. But because of that, I like have to pee regularly, as one does, you know. I know you guys really wanted to know these about my functions. So, but when you're sleeping and you have to pee and, you know, you're potty trained and your body won't let you. So in your dream, you keep having to pee.
Yes.
And you keep like going to a bathroom. Like, this is how my brain works. My brain will like say, hey, you gotta go to the bathroom. I'm like, I do, don't I?
You're so right.
And I go to a bathroom and I go to pee and something interrupts me and I can't. And the thing that's interrupting me is me because I'm not going to wet the bed.
That's so funny because I have... dreams when I have to pee at night and I start to in my dream like in a normal place all right grow up but like in my dream a normal place and then I bolt up because I'm like frick I can't be and I'm like okay thank god I wasn't really doing that I did not really and then I have to get up and go and then I'll come back to bed
but I wonder like is that something that over time could get weaker like am I so I don't know I
do your Kegels
you know I mean, I hope to someday have children, and I know that that will wreak havoc on one of those. I've heard going on a trampoline is just a no-go after that, so find me at a trampoline park every day till then.
Yes, truly.
To just have some fun. Now. Yeah, get it out of my system. But, yeah, anyway, in case you were wondering.
Wow. You guys, I feel like we're all so much closer now, and I really want to start today's case knowing all of this about us is with you and you will carry it so softly and sweetly and tenderly and close to your heart forever.
And this table is big enough for all of us.
Yes.
And however you pee, whenever you pee.
However you like to.
Whether you are awake, whether you're dreaming about it, whether you're on a plane, whether you're not.
On ground, on water.
Whatever it may be, there's room for you here and we love you.
All right. Serious question really quick before we get into it. Does the toilet paper go over or under? Because there is a right answer.
The answer is over.
Yes, thank you.
And under is who raised you, you know?
And if you do prefer it under, why?
No, who just raised you?
Tell me.
No, it's uncivilized.
I don't understand it, and I'd like to seek your POV because
it doesn't bear saying out loud because it's wrong, you know?
Right. But that's, you know, like, yeah.
We seek the truth
here. And that's
my
brain.
We seek the truth, and the truth is it's an over.
And my POV is I don't want to see you pee if it's an under on the toilet paper. Like, that's not it for me. But anyway, I want to know your
brain. You want to see me pee if I have it over?
No. I just thought it was a fun spell out, but that did sound weird. So sorry.
Please spell I cup.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. But seriously, don't let me see you pee. I don't want to. And
yeah,
you will never see me pee. You won't even hear it because I have so much performance anxiety. It won't come out, even if I have to. So,
yeah, I have to run the sink for Abel Dabelson.
Yeah, play music, all the above.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, with all that being said.
Yeah, now that we all know too much about each other, should we get into this case?
I think we should.
What are we talking about today?
So, yoo-hoo, pod's on.
Yes, it is.
Hi, hello, and welcome or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, About Time for True Crime.
You guys.
That's us.
Oh.
Thank you again for all of the love and sharing time with us each week for so many years now. And today I wanted to talk about a case near and dear to my heart. I struggle, because as I'm sure everybody knows at this point, when I have a fixation on something, I am fixated. And I want to share every single detail that I know. And I want you to know absolutely everything I do and contemplate like how I do. But in this particular case, I do think that some of the details I know might be tempted to blurt out at every given moment could take away from the tragedy of this case. So I'm going to do my best to refrain and only tell you what is important. And what actually adds important context to this.
Oh.
Yes, because today I want to tell you about the murder of Selena Quintanilla Perez.
Hmm.
As a little background here, I grew up in an area demographically that was almost half Latinx. Mm-hmm. And that usually meant when I was hanging out with friends in school or like going to someone's house afterwards, there would be a lot of Latinx music on.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one friend specifically who I hung out with a lot, and her mom loved Tejano music.
Mm-hmm.
And even more so, you know, I associate this with like specifically driving home, but it was always on. And for those of you who might not know, Tejano music is a mix of like some classic Mexican folk music, but it also usually includes like some pop or kind of waltzy sounds. And it's very fun. Normally, Tejano music is sung by like male performers. So there's some of that. But I just had a really big spot in my heart for female Tejano music singers.
Yeah.
And they might be Tana. I don't speak Spanish, so I don't know. But I think they could be. And again, it's not much in my music repertoire these days, but it always brings me back to the backseat of that van driving back in middle school or high school. And, you know, we were always hearing icons. We heard like Jay Perez, Bobby Pulido, Alina Rada, but mostly, of course, Selena. Selena specifically reminds me of this time as she was already gaining legendary status between her talent, achievement, and being a wonderful role model. Least of all to mention being tragically murdered.
Yes.
And while Selena and even some Selena y los Tinos are still around, and I have quite a few of them that remain in my playlists, they opened up a world of music to my world. I have Selena because I love her. And honestly, I also have Stromae to thank. He's entirely different. He's a French artist. But for just opening doorways for a lot of other kinds of music from different cultures to be interested in. Truly, I have them to thank for my love of Carol G, Anuel A.A., and Babuni.
If you say so.
Bad Bunny. And I guess they have her to thank for creating such a welcoming path for non-Spanish speaking listeners like me to fall in love with it. Before we hop all the way in, as per the usual, I wanted to list some of my sources and trigger warnings. For sources, I wanted to shout out a phenomenally detailed podcast series on Selena's life and death called Selena, A Star Dies in Texas. Killer Instinct podcast, Selena Quintanilla Obsessed to Death. I also watched more than a few coverings of this, including interviews with the woman charged for Selena's murder. Of course, I watched a Dr. Todd Grande just to get a psych person's perspective on what happened here, and so many other coverings of this. Of course, all of my news and journal sources will be linked. They will have to be linked in a Google Doc today because it's about a page long. But I also got some sources from the Smithsonian, NPR, Rolling Stone, you name it. As far as trigger warnings, today there is mention of sexual assaults, murder, and potentially some like infidelity and suicide.
Okay.
So proceed with caution. Take care of you. We love you. And we want you to be good. So, all right, let's hop into it. Finally, if you don't have the luxury of Van Wright's home, like me, or have never been introduced, let me tell you about Selena Quintanilla's life. She was born in Lake Jackson, Texas in 1971 as the youngest of three siblings. She had an older brother, Abraham Isaac Quintanilla, who went by AB. Mm-hmm. He was a third, so their dad was a junior, so I think that probably just, you know, avoided confusion. But she also had an older sister, Suzette Quintanilla. And Selena's parents, Marcia and Abraham Quintanilla Jr., met in the 60s during his active military service. They fell in love, and Marcia has never really been a very vocal person, at least in the public and the media, so it's hard to really tell a lot of her personality. But from her friends and family, it sounds like she is just a loving mother. She really enjoys being in like a supportive role with her family, and or at least she felt really good about being able to do that well, and she took a lot of pride in that. And of course, she loved everybody so much. So again, she's never been very vocal, but Abraham, on the other hand, whew, he's a hell of a personality. He's always been tough, loving, and dedicated to music and his family. And after a long time in a relatively successful band of his own called Los Dinos, he finally settled down with Marcia to support his family. Mm. So by 1971, when the couple had Selena, Abraham and Marcia had been married for 8 years. They already had AB and Suzette. And Abraham was working hard for the Dow Chemical Company. And while he wasn't performing music publicly anymore, he never dropped his passion for music at home. He'd still play the guitar and sing, and he had a real passion for showing all sorts of music things to AB and Suzette, and then when Selena was old enough, her as well. And there was one time when she's in like school age, maybe 9 or 10, that I think he was playing guitar and like making some music with her siblings, and she just started belting, and he was like, oh no, she like actually has a talent for this.
Aww.
And she did. She had a voice that was insane. Like at 10 was doing things that people in pop music right now are doing as adults.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible talent.
I know so little about Selena. What I do know is that she was just so family oriented. And mm-hmm. So like, I think all of that was instilled in her. Like, I know that her family was very religious, very Christian, and very like that. The importance of the family unit and that bond and loving and supporting each other and just kind of like accountability, and like her parents were strict and they didn't let all of that go to her head, because she, even from a really young age, she was really good, but they were like,
nope,
you got to get your stuff done though.
And, I mean, she's literally been called the Madonna of music, but family oriented. Like, she is the role model Madonna.
She was so like, what a good role model for kids too, to see that like, you can have all of this talent. She was absolutely stunning.
Oh, Stunning.
But she never lost her roots.
Nope.
And she never lost the importance of family. I mean, until she died. I mean, she was so young.
Oh, so young.
So oriented, when anyone else at her age could have gone off the deep end.
Oh, yeah.
It drew her closer to her family.
And she did all of that and made Bitty Bitty Bum Bum. So, like, what? What else could you want?
What a talent.
I know. Honestly, Bitty Bitty Bum Bum has been playing in my head all week. Like, all week.
I believe that.
Yes. But it was so family oriented because that was their whole life. And not long after this incident, or right around when they found out that Selena had this insane talent, Abraham and a friend went in on a restaurant they called Papagayo. And it had like a little stage in the corner. So it's like a Mexican restaurant in Texas. And they ran it together. Jim and Abraham worked incredibly hard. But Abraham then had Selena, Suzette, and AB frequently play on the stage. So they'd play music together. Aww. And AB had a real talent for guitar. Abraham taught Suzette drums. And then Selena, like little 9, 10-year-old Selena, was busting vocal moves at 9 in this restaurant.
If I were to walk into a restaurant today and there's a little stage, mm-hmm, and I see kids get on there, I'm probably thinking, oh no.
Yes.
And then you hear them and you're like, Oh, wait a second. They're really talented. They're really good. Because you might think, oh, which kid's going to start screaming at the mic?
Well, you have like, I don't know, maybe 9 to 15 as an age range.
Right.
And that maybe feels...
But the singer big. Being the youngest one, you're thinking, this can't be good.
Yeah.
And then it's Selena.
And it's Selena. So, insane. But obviously, that's not all. Because during this time, culturally, a lot of immigrants were trying to fully assimilate their children to U.S. culture, no matter where they were from. Mm-hmm. So Selena and her siblings did not speak Spanish at all.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to learn Spanish. Specifically, Selena was learning Spanish to sing Tejano music, which is crazy to think about.
And so special that her family really focused on, like, American values too, and so like they had sort of that mix of both, yeah, that they got to grow up in, and like learning their language. That's really beautiful.
I think it's really cool. I am always a fan of teach your kids both. They can learn better younger, and I'm really jealous I don't know another language so easily.
Oh, my husband speaks more than one language, and I already said our kids will be bilingual.
So you will teach them.
They will, yes. What a talent. And it's so good for your brain. There's like so much science behind it, of like the different areas of your brain that get activated to be able to do that and to switch between the two and translate in your mind.
Yeah.
It's
huge.
Very intelligent to be able to do that. It's a sign of intelligence. I'm like, you better be, just no, don't talk shit about me right in front, yeah, of me.
That's but, my only rule.
But they will know.
Yeah. And like, I thought it was so endearing too, because then, you know, as time went on, they would do like press tours and Selena would say something wrong, or like, you know, with maybe the wrong accent or the wrong conjugation, and people would be like, you just said that was an avocado, and she'd be like, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed, I'm so sorry, no, I meant this.
But she's learning, and that, how, and awesome, and she's so young, but she's so young enough to learn that, you know.
Yes.
I mean, I wish I grew up speaking Italian. I wish my family, you know, had impressed that. I had family members that spoke Italian before they spoke English, and I wish,
yeah,
you know, it just, what a talent, what a cool way to have that. And she's just learning, and
yeah, oh, she's so cutie as a little kid too.
She's absolutely stunning. She's been stunning her whole life.
Yeah. And so the two, between learning music and finding their place, and for Selena practicing Spanish every day also, they got this ability to perform on stage, and they had whoever was eating as an audience. So the three Quintanilla kids became so incredibly comfortable with music and performing, they ended up naming themselves as a band. It was Selena y Los Dinos, which is a sweet nod to Abraham's past of music. But they became so good at it. Unfortunately, with a struggling economy at the time, the restaurant had to close just about a year later in 1981.
Oh.
While times were tough, as you may imagine, Abraham was a very proud man. He did not like help. He did not want to admit he needed it. And one day, after a very begrudging trip to the city welfare to get food stamps, where in every telling of this I've heard, it sounds like Marseille kind of like dragged him by the collar to be like, you need to feed your family. Like, we're going. Somebody there recognized Selena as the girl who sang at Papagayo.
It's like a faded moment.
Yeah.
The odds of the timing of that, right?
Yeah. And this specific moment gets brought up a lot when people ask Abraham how they ended up on this path, how they ended up on this journey, because he was already convinced and steadfast about his children's musical abilities. But it was this that pushed him to decide that this was his family goal. Selena y Los Tinos had the talent to be a hit, and he was going to make it happen. He knew how to navigate the music world. This is what they were doing. So the family moved to Corpus Christi. They sold their house and, you know, avoided more financial stress that was going on. And there, Abraham had Selena y Los Tinos perform anywhere they could. Weddings, public spaces, corners of like parks that were around. Mm-hmm. Any function he could get them to be at. And there is like a dramatized series that her sister works really closely on. And one of the scenes in there has him being like, we can perform for your family reunion. Like literally anything.
Yeah.
And so this was great for people listening to. And obviously it wasn't always easy. Since Selena y Los Tinos, despite their immense talent, were children.
Actual children.
Actual children. And people would see them and be like, what is this?
This is like if the Jackson 5 of Michael Jackson's dad weren't such a drill sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know what I mean? It's just like that you run that risk of overworking children.
Yep.
And it's not fun for them anymore and they don't enjoy it and they don't want to.
Yeah.
Because they carry the weight of the pressure of supporting their whole family. Like, you can see what happened to that family. It was horrible. And it seems like terrible. These kids are maybe kept away from the stress of it and like more seeking it because they want to have fun.
I think it definitely was more fun than the Jackson 5, although Abraham was pretty intense. I mean, he really treated this like a business, which you have to, because music is, you're performing a service. But I know from everything I've seen, Suzette wasn't like stoked about playing the drums, but she did. And like, you still get to hang out with your siblings and you're kind of moving around doing all these fun things. I don't think they really went to normal school like they did for maybe a little bit. And then they ended up having like assignments taken with them on the road to like go perform places. And I think they ended up just doing more of like a homeschool thing eventually.
Got it.
But they were still all together and they all did seem to enjoy at least the process of it, if not the everyday intensity, you know? And by 1984, when Selena was just 13, they signed their first record deal.
Yeah, that's crazy.
13. The Quintanilla family, while separate in their drive, family band business, and genuine talent for music, was very much like other families too. Abraham didn't allow dating within the band, and he had a very tight hand on everything that happened. He has been criticized for being a little bit controlling and a little bit intense. But I also think that that's a lot of parents, and especially if you're a parent with your children performing and sort of like other people have a lot of access to them, I'd probably be a little bit more intense on that too.
Yeah, I think there's a balance, right? You can see like the Culkin family, where you could see like Macaulay Culkin and his brother, whose name is escaping me. I think it starts with an E.
Yeah.
You know, they would describe it as their dad was like they were kind of like pawns, like workhorses. Yes. It was like, you go out,
you do this thing, you come back.
You need to do that. Versus like, I think very responsible for a dad, especially with like a young daughter, to be very like protective over who's allowed around. Like, that is some dangerous waters you can get in with that.
Yeah.
So I think there's probably a balance. I say as if I have any idea what the circumstances were like, but I think there are definitely plenty of wrong ways to do it.
Yes. And I think it sounds like there was a definitely more of a balance than I think you normally hear about with child stars. I don't know that it was perfect. I wasn't there. But even Suzette and AB have been like, no, we're good. Like, we are independent. It is fine. So who knows fully, but I'm going to err on the side of it was pretty good. And maybe a toe over the line intense, but not, you know, cannonballing into the deepest waters of too much.
Right.
So there was all of that going on, but they were also just like still kids. Like, they all seemed to have a good understanding that their band was a business and pride for their family, but also they just hung out. You know, that Selena would like want to go to a movie and she'd ask her dad and he'd say no. And she'd be like, Suzette, can you go ask? Like, he said no to me. Like, can you go? Or, you know, just like goofing around when they weren't performing.
Yeah.
In fact, there is a story of them trying to get like maybe a keyboard player or a bass player added to the family band. And he came in and saw that Selena and maybe Suzette were just like goofing off playing catch or a ball or something in wherever the auditions were happening. And he left because he was like, you're not serious. And then it ended up being Selena.
Oh, you but missed it. But
she was like a child. She's just a kid. Like hanging out.
Yeah. I'd be more concerned if a kid came in polished and formal and like ready to make a business deal.
Yeah. Sat with her, you know, like your little legs crossed and your head up high in your business suit at 10. I'd be like, no, ma'am.
Yeah. Like, she believed in Santa like 2 years ago. Please.
Literally. So Selena specifically had been said to have so much of a silly, outgoing, like bubbly personality. She loved design and fashion, and she actually would use some of her downtime to design her own costumes for performing.
Okay, cute.
Cute. And as the years went on and everyone got a little older, the band changed a bit. There were, of course, setbacks like economic uncertainty and finding out that due to Spanish being a second language, they were less welcomed in Mexico than they originally anticipated. Because it was like they're, you know, not originally doing this from our culture, even though they were. They just had to learn the language.
They're a Mexican family, though.
Yes, they are. So,
well, of Mexican heritage.
Yes. No, I mean, they think they are. I think both Marcia and Abraham were from there. I know for sure Abraham was. He was like a first generation in America.
But his children were American, and yeah, so they were kind of rejected.
Yes, for a little bit.
Can you reject Selena?
Selena.
Ugh.
And I mean, eventually they did come around, but you know, that's crazy. And if they continued to persevere through this, they made records, they did eventually find their audience and growing in name and popularity. However, as they grew, the whole family kind of realized that Selena was a rising star in every sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe she was maybe going a little bit beyond what they anticipated they were going to be able to do.
She surpassed her siblings, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in 1987, mind you, she is 16.
Oh, my goodness.
She won the Tejano Music Award for Best Female Vocalist, which changed the band's entire trajectory.
Of course it did.
And essentially, this changed in leading to their dismembering of the original Selena y Los Dinos, creating a way for it to be Selena. And she got a band, and you know, everybody says like once you make it to a first name basis, you get like Cher, Madonna, like you know you've made it.
Yeah, Selena.
She did that at like 16.
Right.
And from all accounts, it seems like this was a good thing. Suzette really did not like playing the drums. I think AB continued to do his own stuff on the side, but he also became her producer and writer.
Oh, cool.
And then her dad was still the manager. So it was still very much like a family affair.
Mm-hmm.
And Selena grew in notoriety and accomplishments. She even became the first Tejano artist to win a Grammy. And with her extra ability and now extra income, she was able to make another one of her dreams came true and opened up two boutiques that she could share her love of the fashion world with everyone, named Selena Etc.
Oh.
Very cute. Also, fun fact, actually, Selena met her husband during this era of her life. His name is Chris Perez, and he was in the band. They ended up hitting it off when they were writing a jingle for a Coca-Cola ad. And then I don't know if he was before or only after, but he did become the main guitarist in the band.
Mm.
And as you might remember, there was a no dating within the band rule. Abraham.
Bro.
And so, yes, he was an incredibly supportive and driven man and manager, but not supportive of dating, I guess, for Selena, or at least I don't know if it's just because Chris was in the band or not. So they kept it on the DL, if you will, and they ended up kind of being together a lot on like maybe a little vacation getaway after one of her records did really well. Sounds like this was not frequent. So they were like, okay, we're going to like go away and celebrate a little bit. And they ended up being around each other a lot. And they were like, oh my gosh, wait, I kind of like you. And then not long after, they both admitted their feelings for each other in a Pizza Hut, which just feels so nostalgic and so sweet.
Oh,
yeah. They went to a Pizza Hut and they were like, I like you. Like,
I like you.
Yes. And so they kept this so DL. They had like a relationship that was not known. And then eventually Suzette ended up telling Abraham, which like rude, but also, I mean, honest.
But also sisters.
So sister of her. So sister of her. I don't know what Selena did to get her in trouble first, but.
Or so what sister. Selena was going to get her in trouble right. for after. Yeah.
But it just made me laugh because that is so siblings. And now Abraham was very angry. So he told them that it was over and Chris would have to leave the band if it continued.
Oh.
And the two pretended to do so, but then they just kept it on the DL a little longer.
The heart just grows fonder the more you tell them they can't.
Especially as, you know, teens, young adults.
Yeah. But daddy, I love him.
But daddy. And so they did that and they actually did pretty well until one day Abraham accidentally caught the two of them out together. Like, I don't think he was searching for it. I think he found them.
Ruh-roh.
And he was pissed and he got so angry. He was, you know, yelling. He was upset. Selena started yelling back at him, which does not sound like something she did frequently.
Mm.
And they kept getting into it. And Chris tried to like placate the situation. He tried to mediate it and he was unsuccessful. But he actually ended up also getting really frustrated because Abraham called him a cancer to the family with that, which is harsh. And so they actually did get a little more distant for a while. They kept in touch. They still talked through her tour. But there was one day in 1992 during a tour that Selena found his hotel room and like literally came pounding on the door and was like, I can't do it. I don't want anybody else. I don't want anybody else. I want you. I want you forever. I think we should elope.
Aww.
And Chris was like, I'd love that. But like, you deserve a wedding. Like, you deserve this nice thing for your family to celebrate. And she was like, I don't think they'd approve. I don't think they'd come to any wedding. I just want to elope, just you and I, and we'll tell them. Because she kind of thought that like we can give it to them at the right time, like sort of ease them into it and make it nice. And the two did elope. It was adorable. You can see the pictures. The problem is Selena's big. She's a big fucking name now. So the paparazzi and the media caught wind of their elopement. And that's how her family found out, was from media.
Oh, no.
And yes, it was awkward. And I'm sure there was some upset people at the beginning. But Selena was actually right. Once they did elope, there was a lot less pushback about Chris. And the family actually ended up really accepting him and taking him in.
But there's more to life than work.
Yes.
And what, don't you want your kids to be happy?
Yeah.
And they found someone, a good someone. Yes. Not someone who's leading them down a path of, you know, destruction.
Right.
Somebody who loves her and cares for her and wants to see her do well and wants to be a part of that and take care of her.
Yeah.
Like, as a dad, isn't that what you want?
Literally.
Just to, you know that your kids are happy and secure in something.
And I will say, that relationship grew so sturdy that they still have very close, like, familial bonds and relationships today.
Good.
Which is great. So that's very sweet. And that is her real life version of Amor Prohibido, which is one of her album titles, which is so cute.
I'm looking at their photos right now and they're just absolutely precious.
Right? But here's where things start taking a turn. Because it's this year, in 1992, that we meet one of Selena's biggest fans.
Mm-hmm.
After a concert in San Antonio, a woman named Yolanda Saldivar decided that she was Selena's biggest fan.
She had a funny way of showing it.
She sure did. She was about 10 years older than Selena, and her life at that point was essentially being a nurse. It was kind of a struggle, but she just fell in love with this music, and she decided she wanted to run the fan club.
Yolanda was only in her 30s?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, she might have been 12 years, like 10 to 12, but...
Right, but I always imagined her having like at least 2 decades on her.
Yes. It's wild.
Okay.
She is more of like a homely looking woman. She's got like a nice round face. She has like a very timid, quiet sort of presence wherever she goes, but she is stubborn. So she ends up calling Abraham and asking to be the president of Selena's fan club.
She is, compared to Selena, I think jealousy was rampant from Yolanda. She was such a fan, but it was like, did she love her? Did she want to be her?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. There's a stark contrast between Yolanda and Selena.
Yes.
Say that.
In many ways.
And she doesn't even seem like that nice of a person.
No. She seems like very surface level. Again, very like timid, shy, doesn't really open up a lot.
But not in a kind, endearing way.
Yeah.
It seems.
Kind of period. Yeah.
I think, was it in the movie with J-Lo where they did she was Selena back when J-Lo like was not known?
Oh, yes.
That they I think they made Yolanda seem a lot more, for the movie, like a lot more friendly.
Well, I think at the beginning, she was definitely a lot more timid and cold in that sort of like, you're not sure what's happening there. But over time, she did get really close with Selena. And
not in a way that like she was so, I don't know. Everything I had read before about this is like years ago.
Yeah.
She seemed very like kind of cold, calculating, I guess, maybe.
I think that was maybe, not even maybe, that was definitely the vibe that other people got. But then if you see like videos of her and Selena together where it's like just them, they're giggling. Like they're having a blast.
Which just makes you more angry.
Interesting contrast, you know? But initially when she first called Abraham, I don't think he bought into it.
Yeah.
And then she repeatedly called him and repeatedly called him. And finally, when he found out that she didn't want to be paid, like she didn't need a role in the band, she just really wanted to run this fan club, he was like, all right, sure. Now, reports kind of differ whether or not he was like super excited about this or just like cautiously optimistic. But as time went on, Yolanda actually really proved her weight by growing the fan club to over 1,500 followers. And then eventually, in the next few years, made it to like 5,000 members. So it was one of, if not the biggest fan clubs in the San Antonio area.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So it was cool. And again, over time, Selena and Yolanda became close despite their age difference. And they were often together and laughing and chatting. And Selena even requested Yolanda become her employee specifically. So she put her in charge of both boutiques of Selena, etc.
Wow.
Yes. And over time, though, despite Selena and Yolanda's growing confidence and friendship, a lot of other people seemed to be getting kind of suspicious of Yolanda.
Yeah.
It started when Abraham started getting calls from fan club members asking for a refund. They hadn't received any of the items they were promised. I don't know if it was like, you know, become a part of the fan club, you get a shirt kind of thing, or if it was more than that. But they decided it just wasn't worth continuing to try to get the item to remain in the fan club. They just wanted their money back.
Uh-oh.
And naturally, this worried Abraham, and in true fashion, he became very upset, and he approached Yolanda, and she said at first it was scammers, that she was on top of it, and they were just trying to get money, like they were just trying to say they sent it so that he'd give a refund. And I think this either placated him for a while, or he allowed that to be the answer for a little bit, but as the calls continued to increase in volume and consistency, he believed that less and less, and he started doing his own investigating. Similarly, other members of Selena's team, like her fashion designer, started having a really hard time with Yolanda. She would ice them out, start drama, or really try to do anything to keep them from getting or remaining close with Selena. And don't quote me on this, but I do think there was a time where they were even struggling to get their paychecks from her.
Okay.
So, but it was big things like that. And they really weren't into it. And at one point, her fashion designer even quit because he was like, it's me or Yolanda on the team. And clearly, like, Yolanda's not going anywhere. I need to be done.
Jeez, that's yes. a problem. So she's stirring things.
Yes, she really is.
The and feathers are ruffled.
They're ruffled, kerfuffled.
If you will.
Truly. Anything but peaceful.
Okay.
And because Selena was close with her, I don't think that a lot of people really tried to tell Selena. Like, I think they were kind of like, you have enough going on. Like, we don't need you to deal with petty drama. And eventually, Selena really became the only person that was, I don't know, standing up for Yolanda.
And because she probably didn't know the extent of the problems.
Right. Despite the age difference, again, they were always giggling or talking business or hanging out. And at one point, Selena got them like best friend rings. Like they both had, like, it was a nice ring. It was like beautiful, but they both had a matching ring to be like, look, besties. Eh. And so cute. Love it. We've done it.
Yeah, we do.
But it was just like they were like attached at the hip to the point where like sometimes on the way back from tours or shows or meetings, sometimes instead of going on the bus, Yolanda would be like, can you ride with me? I just want to talk to you. And then there was one time specifically she did that and Selena came back and was like, I don't even know why she did that. Like, she didn't have anything to tell me. Like, I mean, we talked, we had a good ride home, but like, I didn't need to not be around the band or like the right. bus, you know? So as Abraham continued to get frustrated and more team members got fed up or left, still nobody really wanted to tell Selena what was going on. Whether, again, they wanted to spare her drama or to not distract her, or because at some point when people did slowly start to bring it up, she remained to be really the only one defending Yolanda. It wasn't nearly as prevalent to Selena, the amount of issues that were happening, as it was to others. Yolanda and Selena just continued to sort of soldier on together. And eventually, Abraham's investigating did find something. Well, two things, as it turned out. First, he found that Yolanda had a history of embezzling from a previous job as a nurse in a dermatology office that got her fired and sued. She had stolen something like $9,000 to like $10,000.
That's a problem.
Yes. And remember, this is like 1990s. So inflation makes that a different number.
Yes.
Yes.
And still $9,000 today is not something that's like, we'll just, that's whatever. That's a write-off.
Right.
Like, that's not how that works.
Nope. And she'd been doing it consistently for a long time.
Okay, so she's been stealing from her employers.
And now, this is a personal take, all right? And I know if you're already embezzling, like, we definitely don't have the same ethics or, like, probably money mind. But she also then later that same year got, like, sued for not paying her student loan.
Man.
That was $7,000. I was like, girl, you could have had an extra $2,000 from your embezzlement. Like, paid off your fucking loan. But whatever, obviously.
Abby's like, if you're going to make money moves, make money moves.
Make it smart. I mean, none of what she did was smart, but none of what she did was smart. And I'm like, can't we just like find something?
Like, there? Haven't you heard of the debt snowball?
Truly.
Like, you pay off the debt. Let's get it.
Well, if you owe someone else, your money isn't yours anyway. So.
Goodness.
But anyway, second, obviously that finding prompted him to look more into the fan club, where he found that Yolanda was allegedly, and I'll explain that later, embezzling money from the fan club and some of the boutiques.
Also a problem.
I believe in about a year, she had made checks to herself, signed by herself, that accumulated about $30,000 just from the fan club.
Wow.
$30,000 on top of whatever salary she's getting, because now she's a hired employee, on top of whatever benefits you get from being best friends with Selena and doing all of that. So once Abraham found this out, it was time to have a sit-down conversation with her. And I don't know if other team members were present, but this time, at least, Selena was included too. She was there. And he presented what he found and confronted Yolanda with it. And she, of course, denied. But for the first time, Selena started seeing how little things were really actually adding up. And due to this, Yolanda was in deep trouble. I've seen varying sources saying that she was either fired that first week of March or that she was like in really big trouble and on the verge of it.
Okay.
I tend to believe that she was fired that first week because Abraham said that later in the next month or so. But who knows? It could be wrong. So
either way, they're on to her.
They're on to her. She's in trouble. And it led to a wildly high level of desperation that Yolanda hadn't yet shown before. Now, again, it seems like Selena was becoming more distant from Yolanda, and she just couldn't let that happen. It had been like 3 years of Yolanda being Selena's best friend, confidant, her employee, and all of the benefits of her world opening up to Yolanda. And now that she was fired, or at least on the verge of it, and felt Selena slipping away along with her job, it just wouldn't do. Despite the embezzling and conflict Yolanda had inundated Selena's crew with for a long time, she still had vital documents that Selena needed for taxes. She ran the fan club, she ran the boutiques, and she was fired or got in trouble in early March. And as the month went on, they still didn't have them. And obviously taxes are due mid-April. So Selena's attempts to get these became more frequent and more like intense, like, I need these. So later in March, like the 24th, maybe, Selena called her to get documents again. And Yolanda said that she was in a bad condition. She was crying. And she asked Selena to come see her. And so she did. And Yolanda told her that she had been, and trigger warning here, she had been raped and assaulted multiple times between a recent trip to Mexico, coming back, and on the border.
Okay.
Selena showed up for her friend, and because she has the biggest heart of anybody I know, drove her to the hospital to help her get checked out and, you know, looked at, cared for. And she was seen by Dr. Carla Anthony at this hospital, and Selena was with her, but Dr. Anthony saw no evidence that Yolanda had been sexually assaulted, and she also didn't see any injuries consistent with Yolanda's statement of her assault, because she did say that she was, like, beaten in the back, but she had no bruising consistent with that. There was, like, a bruise around her neck, but nothing else that really matched the story presented. And so Selena ended up taking Yolanda back to her motel where she was staying, and Yolanda gave her a stack of paperwork that she said included all of the tax documents. But as Selena drove home and she sort of went through it, she noticed that the stack did not have any of the documents she needed. But Selena, being a good person and friend, kind of dropped the conversation for that day because her friend was just assaulted and is not in good shape.
Right.
And I know that she continued to contact her, but about a week later, on March 31st, Selena went back to the motel where Yolanda was staying in Corpus Christi, Texas. And once she arrived, the two started arguing. My guess is that she probably had called multiple times before she showed up. But she definitely showed up, and Selena, more and more convinced now that Yolanda was doing these things purposefully, and finally really started to, like, believe the accusations of Yolanda's behavior. She was getting fed up with the display, with the delays and the excuses and everything else going on. I mean, to be fair, she has had multiple businesses and personal taxes to do. She likely needs all of this information for. They were all due in 2 weeks and stressful for sure. And add on top of that, someone who's been your probably best friend and constantly by your side for years has been causing trouble and stealing from you, and you're finally starting to see it. Like, I'd be pissed too.
And it impacts more than just you.
Yes, like, it's not your just family. Your friends.
It's not just a betrayal to you, although it is a betrayal to you. It is now negatively impacting your whole family unit that you care about so much.
Right.
It's a huge slap in the face.
So the two argued, and Selena decided she was absolutely through, actually. The sources that say that Yolanda wasn't fired say that Selena went there to fire her that day. Sources that say she was already fired indicated this was only for the taxes and not for both of those things.
Okay.
Again, I personally tend to believe that she had been fired based off of what Abraham said. But regardless of what the initial intent was, Selena did the unthinkable to Yolanda. She decided to take off her friendship ring and show that she was done for good. Now, quite literally, as the ring came off, Yolanda's 38 caliber Taurus 85 revolver shot Selena once in her back.
Wow. So she waited till she was turned to walk away.
Yes.
Shot her in the back.
Mm-hmm. Talk about stabbed in the back. Leaving a trail of blood, Selena bolted from the motel room as fast as she possibly could. She's yelling for help, and when she finally saw an employee of the motel and got into the lobby or office of some kind, she told the employee to lock the door because she was afraid she'd get shot again. As Selena ran off, Yolanda chased after her for a little bit and yelled bitch as she ran away to safety. Now, before she died, the last thing she was able to tell the employee was that it was Yolanda in room 158. So she identified exactly who it was and where this was.
Wow.
The employee called 911, where Selena was taken to the hospital. And unfortunately, the single shot in her back hit just the right place in her body and tore through a major artery. She bled out and was pronounced dead at the hospital on March 31st, 1995 at 1:05 p.m. She was 23 years old.
Oh, my God. 23. You hear everything she's accomplished and you think she's going to be like retiring.
Yeah.
23 years old.
She was literally just taking off.
She was just starting.
And we already know her how we know her now. Imagine. The day was far from over, though. Yolanda started panicking and spiraling. She moved to her truck and police circled Yolanda, starting what ended up being a standoff that lasted over 9 hours. Wow. Sobbing, distraught, and relatively inconsolable, Yolanda sat in her truck with her revolver to her temple, claiming that she was going to kill herself and that she didn't mean to.
Mm.
The police department did great work calming Yolanda and de-escalating, at least enough to get her safely into custody, where I am positive that she was put on suicide watch until more developments came.
Most likely.
She certainly should have been if she wasn't, but I'm like 100% sure that would have happened. Selena's husband, Chris, and the entire Quintanilla family grieved in a way they never expected they would ever have to. Abraham called Yolanda a disgruntled employee who had been fired in a press conference just a few hours after the events of that afternoon. Before the trial, the family held a public memorial for Selena, and they essentially kind of had open house hours for an entire day.
Mm.
Not only were they there to pay their respects, but a lot of fans came from everywhere to sort of see it, to believe it, to process it, and to say goodbye. Unfortunately, because it was a closed casket memorial service, a lot of people who got there at first believed that Selena wasn't even there, that it was like a fake casket.
Really?
Truly. To the point that this sort of rumor and dissent sort of became so known, Abraham found out about it. And he was like, fuck it. He didn't say this, I'm saying this, but he was kind of like, fuck it, open the casket. Like, and they did. She was there, as promised, because that is their memorial for their daughter.
You shouldn't have to be worrying about that and proving anything to anybody while you're doing the worst thing a parent could ever have to do, which is right. Bury their child.
I just think it feels awful to have to do that so that the family could have peace while paying respects to their daughter, their sister, their wife, you know? But they did, and people eventually who were there calmed down, and then, of course, the people that were there before the casket got opened were annoyed that they didn't get it. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm glad you came to say your respects.
Obviously, you weren't there for the right reasons if you came to, like, see something no one else had seen.
Right. Or if you're pissed that you didn't get access to that kind of goodbye.
As if you're deserving of that access to this family.
Right. And they're allowing everybody to be at this. You know what I mean?
Ugh.
But anyway, I personally, I just hate that that had to happen. and that it did. But the trial was big news for Selena fans, and this had a very close following in many nearby towns, but especially for the Latinx community. While there were pretrial motions and some drama before, eventually allowing the case to be moved to Houston for a better chance at a fair trial, and having to have like a very watchful eye over the voir dire so that both sides felt comfortable with the jury members allowed in, they were finally able to start the trial on October 9th of 1995.
Okay, so same year, a few months later.
And I'm going to say, to be honest, this is maybe the closest thing I'd consider to be a fair and speedy trial we've seen in a while.
Yeah.
Right? But the case itself wasn't televised. However, they did allow cameras to be on premises.
Okay.
And these showed hundreds of fans showing up every day, mourning Selena, seeking justice. Some had strong feelings on Yolanda's guilt or innocence, but all of them wanted to see justice claimed.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, I don't know the specifics of this, but it did sound like there was also maybe a lottery system for any open seats in the courtroom.
Got it.
So also, if they were there and got lucky, they might be able to sit in on some of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was different every day.
Yeah.
And while I won't insult you or waste your time with all of the details, Yolanda's defense claimed it was an accident. That Yolanda's gun unfortunately misfired, and that hit Selena.
Sure, Jan.
Sure, Jan. After all, Yolanda had a letter of resignation in her purse proving that she's the one that wanted to leave the organization. Now, it was dated before the 31st when all of this happened, but also certainly after the first week of March, for those of you who believe she was fired that first week. So do with that as you will. And, you know, she never wanted to hurt Selena. She just had enough of Abraham's constant controlling rules and intensity. At some point, there was also stories that Selena accidentally got shot while Yolanda was trying to kill herself. And yet another story that circulated that perhaps someone else was trying to kill Yolanda and accidentally killed Selena instead. I don't know if those made it into the court, and you really couldn't convince me, but they have circulated over time.
I think I'm going to go with Occam's razor on this one, personally.
Yeah, it seems right.
Yeah, I think the most likely thing is that Yolanda panicked and knew she was caught and was angry.
Mm-hmm. Also, you're going to tell me that the gun accidentally fired that was stored in your purse and just so happened to be aiming up, or like the purse was up enough that it got Selena in the shoulder?
No.
And it was aimed directly at where she was leaving?
Nope.
But don't worry, because Yolanda made several claims, including that Abraham had sexually assaulted her. Again, this gun misfire. But she also said that Abraham pushed her to do this.
She's blaming the dad?
Yeah.
That his daughter was killed by her?
Yes.
Okay.
The assault was essentially disproven almost immediately. And obviously, the flip-flopping statements of this being an accident and a misfire to Abraham pushed her to do this really persuaded anybody of everything but her innocence.
Mm-hmm.
Before the jury deliberated, Abraham addressed the jury saying that he prayed they had children. Selena was his heart, and when Yolanda shot her, she took two lives that day.
Mm.
Eventually, after 2 hours, which is short, Yolanda was sentenced to 30 years to life in prison with the possibility of parole.
Okay.
Now, I want to say, if any of you are interested in this trial, that series Selena, A Star Dies in Texas has such a good deep dive with the court process and the trial. They do really good interviews with the prosecutor.
Mm.
And he had so much to say about this that was fascinating, including genuinely being concerned for his well-being. His wife gave him something, maybe a cross necklace or something sentimental and religious. And she was be safe, pray. And they were did you really feel you needed to do that? And he was yeah, I really did.
The prosecutor in the case?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Because the defense attorney that Yolanda had was a very well-known, I'm assuming had a very high win streak of trials, and a white man. And a lot of people were saying that the prosecutor, because he was Latinx, or maybe was newer to prosecuting. I don't know if he was new to being a lawyer, but he didn't have the experience that a lot of people thought he should have. They were like,
for that high profile of a case, I can kind of see why he'd be sweating it.
Yes. And they were like, you don't know what you're dealing with. Like, you should step down. He was like, well, I can't step down. That's not how this works. But also, like, well, now I want to do a good job. And he did so phenomenally in the opening statements. He basically disproved half of their theory with his first three witnesses.
Excellent.
Love him. He did a great job.
Snaps for him.
Truly. But after the trial, there were some issues with evidence. See, both Yolanda's gun and Selena's ring were missing.
Yeah, okay.
I have heard people claim it was weird they couldn't find the ring in the motel room afterwards, but that's actually because Selena had it on her person in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. I think it like fell out of her hand or something, but it did get entered into evidence. It just wasn't in the room.
Got it.
And somehow after this trial was done and the evidence was being moved, they misplaced, I guess, the murder weapon, Yolanda's revolver, and this ring. They just disappeared. And eventually, you know, they were able to find these. They ended up being in like the garage of a journalist who reported on the case. It didn't sound like they had like maliciously taken them. I think they were like, oh my gosh, like these are like in my garage. Like what? And nobody, I mean, whatever it was, nobody was like, like accusing them of taking it. But what came after that was as they were deciding what to do with them, they obviously released the ring back to Abraham because that's his property. And they were trying to figure out what to do with the gun. And when they had these items before the trial, obviously they did their forensic investigating. They found, you know, the bullet belonged to the gun. They found the bullet purchase order tracing back to Yolanda. Like, they proved that this was all her. And also, when you say someone pushed you to do this, you are confessing to doing this. And so they decided they didn't need the gun anymore.
Okay.
But what happened was people were being nuts, as you might imagine, because people are nuts. And they were like, can you auction this? Like, I will buy this gun. Like, I want this. Or they were like, put it in a museum so we can all like gawk at the gun that killed Selena, which is also just kind of gross and fetishizing of the gun somehow. Like, I don't like it. But neither did the judge. Thank God. And he decided that the most respectful course of action would be to just destroy it.
That's fair.
And now this has been brought up as like an issue by some of Yolanda's family and maybe her appeal cases. I don't know. They were like, how can we do that without the gun? And they were like, well, we did all the forensic testing. That is done. You don't need the gun once you've done the testing on the gun. So it was destroyed.
And you admitted it. Like, what do you mean?
Yes, literally. And that's the funniest thing to me about hearing the prosecutor speak. He's like, well, she admitted it. So if they're going to say that she didn't do it, they're like, someone's committing perjury. They're calling her a liar.
So who's it going to be?
Right. Great man. Love it. To date, Yolanda continues to claim her innocence. Her family believes she's innocent, and she has been writing her sister while incarcerated to release maybe her own memoir or thoughts on the situation.
Of course she is.
She did release a book early afterwards about the trial process, I believe. But, you know, she's also been able to sit for interviews, including ones for shows like Murder Made Me Famous, I think is what it was called.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, of course, she never sways on her innocence. She is innocent, innocent, innocent. But when she's been interviewed, she always focuses on two things specifically. The first is just how close they were. She uses a secret between her and Selena that nobody else knew as evidence of this. Apparently, Selena, by Yolanda's account, was having an affair with an older man.
No, she wasn't.
A dermatologist, I believe, named Dr. Ricardo Martinez. And he had been working with her on opening her third boutique that she wanted to include a spa. Yolanda says that they were so close, nobody else in Selena's life knew about it. In fact, she even brought it up before trial, but nobody ever called Dr. Martinez to testify. He also didn't say anything around this time. However, in an interview in 2012, he did briefly say they had a short affair. It's never been confirmed. We don't have any other evidence except for this one instance of him saying it like 15 years-ish.
So he can make a
buck? After this happened.
And she can't defend herself? Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? But there's been no other talking about it from anything I know. And everybody that was close with Selena denies this. That isn't Yolanda, you know? And not that I think an affair is impossible, but given her schedule... Like, just give it her schedule. Mm-hmm. But also long-term commitment and, like, notable happiness with Chris, it seems so unlikely.
Right.
But Yolanda claims that Selena wanted to run away with Dr. Martinez and start new. And Yolanda didn't want to tell her what to do, but she didn't think it was right.
Yolanda also claimed a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yolanda talked out of her ass frequently.
It apparently still does. So, it's crazy how she can throw her voice like that to her mouth.
I think it's amazing. Like, yeah.
But what genuinely, like, to my core makes me so angry about this is how loving her and Chris were and how absolutely disrespectful this claim is to their marriage and her widower. Mm-hmm. But also that Yolanda has the guts to say things that, like, they were so close. Selena called her mom from time to time. Like, she noted, of course, she's not trying to take Marseilla's place, but that it was a term of endearment. And personally, look, I am not Latinx, nor do I have many close members of my community anymore that are around me. But I have heard of people using tia or like auntie as a term of endearment,
mm-hmm.
Especially for like maybe your mom's friends or like a close family friend that you have respect for.
Yeah, who's got some years on you.
Right. And I've heard mommy or mamita used for like girlfriends or just like your friends, mm-hmm. in like kind of a playful way. Mm-hmm. But I haven't really heard a lot of people like taking a tia and making them mommy, you know?
Mm.
Could it be? Absolutely. I'm not an expert on it, but I just haven't really heard of it.
Mm.
And it seems like an odd thing to put out there to say, like, we were so close, she did this. And then the only other thing you have as proof is something that nobody else knew about at all.
Because it probably isn't true.
Right. And what a convenient way to say that we're so close. I know this thing nobody else knows, so nobody else can deny.
Yeah.
Basically. But the second thing Yolanda continues to claim is that they have never convicted her for embezzlement of those things. There was no proof. She says anytime she's interviewed and asked directly about the day of the shootings, that this is what she comes back to time after time. She's like, no court of law has ever been able to prove it. Which okay. is not, by the way, I did not do this.
No.
It is, not. I have not been convicted.
Absolutely ridiculous.
But personally, I think the conviction for first-degree murder is far more important and probably took precedence over the embezzlement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just me. What do I know?
I mean, maybe.
And when she is finally backed enough into a corner that she can't avoid questions about the murder directly, she still says it was an accident.
Shut up, Yolanda.
Literally. Often she is pressed about why. You know, if you're a good friend, why wouldn't you immediately try to help Selena? Like, if this was an accident, you have a background in being a nurse. That's what she did before the 3 years she met and worked with Selena.
Right.
Her whole life was mm-hmm. a nurse. So you're going to tell me that you, her closest friend, were in the presence of her when she accidentally got shot by a misfired gun. And you're not even going to try to help? You're not even going to call 911?
No, you chase her and call her a bitch, actually, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
And the other thing people bring up that I believe is, like, if you are that good of friends and you are accidentally shot, why is your first response to sprint as far away from them as possible?
No.
And then tell someone else who it was, what room they're in, and to lock the door because you're afraid.
Yep.
It just doesn't. It doesn't add up at all.
No, it doesn't, because it's not true.
And again, Yolanda also tried to appeal twice. They were denied twice, as they should be. And recently was up for parole in 2025.
Mm.
It's interesting because 2025 was her minimum sentence, right? That was her 30 years incarcerated. It was the 30th anniversary of Selena's murder. And luckily,
she didn't get it.
She was denied.
Thankfully.
Woohoo. But fear not, Yolanda is up for parole again in 2030.
Yeah.
But hey, she's never been convicted of embezzlement, I guess. The family has gone on to mourn in different ways. As noted, Selena's mom, Marcia, is quiet and has been for a long time, but she grieved very privately. I did have the pleasure of getting to see one of her first interviews in a relatively recent documentary, and she says that she's able to like express so much gratitude for the ways that the community refuses to forget Selena, yeah, and that it brings peace and comfort to her that, or at least the closest thing to peace I'm sure you can get in this situation, that she is still so loved and people continue to love her.
Yeah.
Abraham was more open to talk about it and showed his grief and sorrow, but also at his anger towards Yolanda. He was really frustrated with any of the things she would say that would specifically just not only hurt Selena's image, but essentially hurt the reputation of everyone in their family. Mm-hmm. And how disrespectful is it to do that to someone who can't defend themselves, but then also to blame their loving family for the horrible actions that you did?
100%.
AB continued to work in the industry and has often shared photos and memories of Selena and the Ilostinos days, yeah, both of them. And he actually seems like he's still very much loving being in the music industry. And Suzette has talked about Selena. She has done interviews and has helped produce, again, that Netflix dramatized series of Selena's life. She is so heavily involved with it. And it just warms my heart knowing that this is something she can feel good about and like has influence over the way that this is announced or portrayed to the world, to the point that she feels good about it. And I think that's probably kind of therapeutic to be able to process. Both AB and Suzette have denied Abraham being fully controlling, noting that he was tough in the industry because he had to be. And yes, he had expectations, but they are independent and are able to live their own lives and have been. And Chris wrote a book to Selena. It was a memoir called To Selena with Love in 2012. Where he talks about their relationship and their marriage. He did remarry in like 2000 something, mm-hmm, like years after this. And he is still so close with the family, which warms my heart.
Yeah.
And honestly, if nothing else, I think that's proof enough that there was no affair going on. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But recently, as in recently, about a month ago, unfortunately, Abraham passed away in Corpus Christi, Texas. He had been married to Marcia for over 60 years.
Wow.
He made an impact on his family, community, and music scene between his own Tejano days and Selena's.
Wow.
But just to wrap this up, to remember Selena, what an incredible soul. Oh my word.
What a legacy that she could make and leave in 23 years that so many people couldn't do in a lifetime.
Right. That we are remembering it and talking about it and feel connected 30 years later.
Wow.
Madonna, again, she's Madonna with family values. She's made mm-hmm. it to share status. She's a one-namer.
Yeah.
And she was incredibly talented. She had a Grammy before 23. She had Best Female Vocalist for Tejano music by 16, and she kept that for like 9 awards cycles or something. She won it 9 times.
That's insanity.
Before 23, which is 7 years.
That's crazy.
She was kind, she was silly, she was goofy, she was outgoing, she loved fashion. It was so much a part of what she loved to do and her artistic expression. Her family loved her. She was still so strong in her family unit. She was like an actual fucking role model for kids.
Yeah, one that isn't horrid.
Yes.
Like we see.
And despite being like a child performer,
mm-hmm.
did not go off the deep end.
I mean, in the short time that she had where she could have, and she did have ample opportunity, she didn't. It's just a shame that we never know what right. else she would have gone on to do. But I mean, even her look is so unique to her. Yes. Like her smile, the like blood orange lipstick,
mm-hmm.
that eyeliner, all of that, like her hair, the bangs,
the
bigger, like just such dark hair. Like that is such a, you see that and you're like, that's Selena, you know?
Yes. And I will say, I kept listening to things, you know, remembering her interviews with Friends or whatever. And I love that part of that was because she loved to play with her hair so much. She just like, she loved playing with it. And at one point she had done so many things to it that it was like all, it was in bad shape. You know what I mean? So she cut it short and that was the short hair era.
Yep.
Because she was like, it's dead. It'll grow back. Here's yep. my like pixie.
Just oh my goodness.
Rocked it.
She did.
Her friends remember, you know, typical teenage shenanigans. She was a foodie. They loved to get like late night fast food. One of her other Tejano music artists that she was really close with, they'd like get ready together before the awards and then they'd go out together after.
That's so cute.
And yes, she did like to do some impulse things because she was a teenager for a lot of this. Her brain never fully developed. We didn't even get there.
Mm-hmm.
So the craziest story I've heard about her from her friends is that sometimes she would like to do donuts in a parking lot.
Wow, she is wild.
Crazy.
Loose cannon.
Truly.
Whatever will she do?
It's just so fun and so like carefree.
And she probably felt like she was being really bad.
Yes. You know, because that's naughty. Like, yeah, I'm going to do a donut in a parking lot.
Not supposed to. I know.
But she loved so deeply. She had such a big heart. Bigger dreams. I mean, she was already looking at opening another boutique and expanding it. She was literally just getting started in her music career. But mostly, she was just so loved. And she loved her family. She loved her mans.
Mm-hmm.
And all the way around. And she loved her fans. She like, was just such a bright light.
And somebody like Yolanda
comes around.
Slinks their way into the success. When you said, I'm looking at photos of the two of them together, and I'm like, there's no way that she's only 12 years older. No, she really is only 12 years older than her. That is crazy. This woman looks like she could be her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that was part of the appeal.
Yeah, I think it's definitely part of what made her
like a matronly support that was not a wild, like she just seemed trustworthy. She just seemed right. Like, what is she gonna do?
Right. And I think that also put people off of her scent for mm-hmm. a while, probably, of like, well, it's just me.
Yep.
I know a lot of people who have met her that are not her family talk a lot about how manipulative she was and how good she was at saying the right thing to get what she wanted, which makes a lot of sense because if you're not physically alarming to people mm-hmm. or like raising flags that way and you have enough plausible deniability and you know just what to say.
Yeah, I don't doubt any of that.
No. I mean, even the whole assault thing to the hospital makes me so sad. Is it absolutely possible? For sure.
Yeah.
Is it the story she said? Almost positively not.
Well, the evidence shows not.
Right. No doctor found anything in accordance with that.
But was she trying to get Selena to put her back in her good graces?
Possible. Getting her off of her back, even for the tax documents for a little while. Like, who knows what the plan
Empathy,
was.
Empathy, sympathy.
Love me again. Don't leave me.
Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting. And I know a lot of people who talk about her, you know, sort of in the realm of narcissism. Like, maybe there was an NPD thing going on. To be fair, she did want to be around people that elevated her status.
Mm-hmm.
She did not seem very like down on herself. And I'm not saying this to advocate for people to feel down on themselves. But I do think there might be a little bit of that, or like an imposter syndrome kind of feeling. If you've gone from nursing and sort of like a nice, humble life to suddenly being in the lifestyle of like a major pop star. Like, I think there'd be maybe something to process with that, that it doesn't seem like she did.
But her poor decisions that got her fired from nursing almost elevated her to getting to work with Selena, that maybe mm-hmm. she thought that this is how it gets done.
Right. And then she took more than three times what she ever did in a hospital or doctor's office setting.
And that's just people. I mean, I do think that there are some people, regardless of what her life experience was mm-hmm. like before this, she could have had a horrible life.
Yeah.
But it does not excuse the actions. You have to. We are accountable to our own actions because nobody else is accountable for them other than us. Yep. There's no one else to point to, that even if she had this horrible experience, that does not give you the right or the excuse or the pass.
No.
To steal from somebody, to manipulate, to swindle, to do any of the things that it sounds like Yolanda really kind of made a career out of.
Yes.
And for that, she will spend the rest of her life behind bars, I think.
I hope. I mean, I think if nothing else, the fact that she can't even cop to her part in it, she won't even talk about it unless she's backed into a corner, is proof enough to me that she is not accountable or mature enough to be released into the general population.
And I hope a parole board would see that too. The fact that she is still justifying and making excuses for what mm-hmm. she did. She's not ready to rejoin civilization. I'm sorry.
No. And I know that her family cares a lot. They believe in her innocence. And I am sure that they are very well intended in that. And it is really hard sometimes when people you love do bad things and have to take accountability for them.
Mm-hmm.
Or not, I guess. But
or not.
Deal with the consequences.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's so fascinating to me. And I also just think, like, even more than the slap in the face that it already is to, like, get in with someone, to be, like, that close to them, have them trust you that much, and to be constantly betraying that trust.
Mm-hmm.
And then freak out when you lose it, like you are entitled to it.
I know.
Somehow. It just feels extra shitty because Selena, one of the reasons she is so beloved by her community and her fans is that she was really like one of the first Latinx music stars, like
right.
outside of just the Tejano scene, which was big enough as it was. But then she's one of the most popular artists in pop, in Latino music, in the mm-hmm. U.S., in like multiple countries. And it was one of the first times people saw a lot of representation, like younger Latinx girls could say, oh, that could be me. Mm-hmm. And she looks like me. She sings my language. She knows my life, basically, and all mm-hmm. of the projection that you get when you see yourself represented somewhere. And to have Yolanda be in that same community and to then specifically end that for her because she couldn't be a part of it, probably knowing what that was doing for entire generations of girls and boys alike,
mm-hmm.
is just like an extra slap. It's yep. just like a little extra backhand on top of it all. But what a woman, what a time. We love Selena. Long live.
And 30 years.
30 years. Wow.
We'll keep an eye in 2030
yeah.
on Yolanda's next parole hearing, and she don't sound ready.
Well, we'll see what five more years can do. But also, you know, let me know if you find out if she ever did get convicted of embezzlement, because she's hanging her hat pretty hard on that one. I didn't see anything, but I'd love to know if it ever happened.
Yeah, right?
thank you guys so much for listening. Before next week, when we bring another case to you, you should check out our Instagram. You can see all the people, the places, the things that we're talking about, including Selena. And you can see funny little Instagrams, like reprieves. We have little memes and silly goofies on there. We have pod pets. We have resources. Allie does a phenomenal job running our Instagram. It is perfect.
Oh, you have to say that.
I sure don't. I just believe it. And if you don't have an Instagram or you want to get in contact with us another way, you could email us, which is also in our link tree below, as well as our PayPal and our Venmo if you wanted to donate fiscally to the pod. If you wanted to give us like a follow, like a 5-star rating, leave a comment, interact with us. We love it. We'd love to hear what you think. Again, please do tell us, are you a TP over or under person? We overshared. I think we deserve to know that answer. No offense and no pressure, but there's plenty for you to do in the meantime.
Yeah, we definitely think you should rate 5 stars because we rate you 5 stars. And yeah, it's only fair.
Literally every day we say, you're 5. You're 6 if I could add a 6-star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But 5 out of 5 is what we can do, and that's what you get.
Truly. But if I do look at my clock, that was about time for true crime. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bitty bitty bum bum. It's your heartbeat.
Oh, goodness.